Well, it's very good to be with you again. It is, right now it's March 25th, 1236 hours in the year 2023. 1236 hours, March 25th. Ward Green here. we have today some interesting things to study. The first thing I want to look at actually is the proverb, chapter 26, verses 24 through 26 is a very interesting group of verses here that I was drawn to, and I don't know what drew me. I just opened this particular chapter. Jehovah, I suppose, is the one who directed me, because I didn't have any conscious knowledge of it. So it says, with his lips the hater makes himself unrecognizable, but inside of him he puts deception. Although he makes his voice gracious, do not believe in him, for there are seven detestable things in his heart. Hatred is covered over by deceit. His badness will be uncovered in the congregation. So this is a warning to us that there are possibly these people who are going to manifest themselves, and that will be, as it says in verse 26, because their badness will be uncovered. But when it's uncovered, we will become aware that there's deceit involved, or deception, and that there's false graciousness involved there too, in verse 25, 24 and 25. Okay. Today's study in the Wild Broad article is Jackson's Babylonian Dynasty, in part one of Wild Road, chapter 4, the last paragraph of the chapter, which is paragraph 12. Jackson's Babylonian Dynasty, this is of importance because it's relating to the time of, well, eventually it gives us the ability to account for the time of Abraham, as well as the time all the way back to the Tower of Babel. Jackson's Babylonian Dynasty, the first kingdom coming after the deluge of Noah. That's important. It's the first kingdom that comes after the deluge of Noah. Jackson granted either 224 and a half or 190 years, which is, in brackets here, the same 34 and a half year period we discussed above. And then the second kingdom after that, which was the Arabian dynasty, Jackson assigns 215 years, which is consecutive to the first Babylonian dynasty, which we also know was Shinar. And the third dynasty, excuse me, also of Babylon, Mr. Jackson offers a total of 217 years in what offers to be none other. I've just been eating peanut butter and it's getting to my throat, sticking in my throat and making me cough or choke a little bit on the, or it's making me need to clear my throat. Mr. Jackson offers a total of 217 years for that third dynasty in what offers to be none other than the dynasty of Akkad, with an excess of 55 years. So in other words, we don't really believe it should be 217. We believe it should be 55 years less than 217. And the reason given is here, the reign of Sargon, as has been similarly put for a famous Belus. In other words, we're saying that Belus could be the same person as Sargon, very likely, whose son, that is the son of Belus, was Ninus of the Assyrian Empire, but who Jackson rightly makes the predecessor of Ninus. He makes him to be the predecessor of Ninus by several reigns. So even though he's called the son of Belus, he's actually several reigns after Belus, so that Belus is the predecessor of Ninus by several reigns. And this is justly so, I say there in this paragraph. Justly so. I've just become aware I need to adjust my width here so we can read this more clearly. Excuse me, I'm sorry about that. There we go. So, paragraph 412. So it's just that we put Sargon or Belus several years prior to Ninus. And let's see why. Well, the totals, we continue right here. The totals we will get to shortly, but the 215 Arabian years, these are the Arabian kings, corresponds quite accurately, and that's the dynasty that succeeds the first dynasty. It corresponds quite accurately with those Sumerian kings, beginning with the dynasty of Akshak, along with the fourth dynasty of Kish, and the third dynasty of Uruk. Now these are the kings listed on the Sumerian kings list. The five kings, let me see if I can get, if a little water will help. Okay, the five kings of Akkad also correspond perfectly with the five kings, in number that is, that Jackson gives from the first Belus. So here, right, these are the kings of Akkad, right, which actually came after the Arabian kings. So this is the third dynasty, not the third dynasty of Uruk. That was part of the Arabian kings, which had 215 years for its dynasty. But this is the third dynasty, the five kings of Akkad. They correspond perfectly with the five kings in number that Jackson gives from the first Belus, who rules 55 years, the other four being 162 years, or near the right total for the five kings. The other four being 162 years, which is almost exactly the right total for all five kings, so that there's a problem with the 55 years being extra. In other words, it's an excess of 55 years, it looks like, from what we know in the modern date, as of today, which is always getting more modern. I mean, progress is made in science, right? We're not an apostate if we make progress scientifically. That doesn't make us an apostate. To be progressive in truth because of advancement in science, that does not make an apostate. The other four total, right, Belus rules 55 years. The other four totaled 162. This excess of 55 years is not surprising, seeing as in traditional lists, Belus is succeeded directly by Ninus, with the omission of the four others. So, there's something interesting to do with Belus that Belus is treated separately from the other kings, and that's why he's considered as being followed immediately by Ninus in some versions of the chronology or the history lists or the king lists. So Ninus is associated with the other four kings, and Belus is separate. And that's why they counted his reign. It would appear that that could be one explanation of how it happened. That's why, because Belus did not actually directly succeed. I mean, because Ninus did not actually directly succeed Belus. But he came, as part of a group of, at the end of a group of four reigns, or four kings that came after Belus. Because he was considered as directly coming after Belus, the reign of Belus became distinct from the other four, and therefore it became subject to this problem of being counted twice, because Belus wasn't considered as part of the four, or as part of the five altogether. He wasn't considered as part of the five sequential list of kings. He was considered as first, and then Ninus came after. And so Ninus was considered as 162 years together with his other group of three other kings together that were with him. It's interesting that could happen, but we can see that's one possible explanation for how this confusion or how this difference or this excess could be accounted for. So, because the other kings were omitted, right, then they didn't even care about how many years, because we know that Ninus himself didn't rule 162 years. At least that's not what the record says. It was far less than that for Ninus, so it was more like 40 or 50 or 40 or some years, or 50 or 45 or some other number, not near 162. So they've omitted all those other kings, so no wonder they would give Belus 55, right, because they don't want to forget him. But then when they account for the other kings, which are 162, they forgot that Belus was part of that 162. It's not that surprising, because they had already forgotten about some of the other kings that were there. But anyway, this is the way we're trying to understand it. And and this is a problem with the understanding of the proper placing of Belus. Okay, we draw the same conclusion I write here as in Ark of Urartu, that the dynasty of Akkad is Jackson's third dynasty, which is an assumption or a conclusion we had to draw. It was not given by Jackson, because he didn't know anything about the dynasty of Akkad in the year 1752 when he wrote his book. He did not even know about, no one knew about the dynasty of Akkad at that time. So we are drawing the parallel. We're concluding that the dynasty of Akkad is this third dynasty of Jackson's, and it totals only something near 161 years rather than 217, which we can see is about 56 years different, or 55 years different. But this is based on modern research, the 161 years. It's based on modern research on the dynasty of Akkad while retaining the maximum reign lengths held by tradition. So the maximum rain lengths that were held by tradition wherever they're known for each of the kings who ruled during that dynasty are maintained. The maximum year number for the length of the reign of each of the kings. So we didn't subtract any of their traditional years in doing this, which is interesting, isn't it? Now, Naram-Sin was the grandson of Sargon, and he was called Sargon the Great. Sargon was called the Great. Naram-Sin was his grandson, and he is confused with Ninus, who we believe also, as in what we've said about Gudea being a king at the time of Abraham, and we identified Gudea as Ninus in our previous work that we haven't yet covered, but we've talked about it. So Ninus lived in Abraham's time. And so, didn't he? But also Naram-Sin lived very close to the time of Abraham as well. And when they talk about the, you know, I mean, Naram-Sin was quite a powerful warrior. So was Ninus. So there's some confusion when they talk about the history of these people as we stated there also in Ark, that Naram-Sin was confused with Ninus. That's what I'm reading here, but we'd have to read Ark in order to find that. We will read Ark. I'm not sure when. Ark of Urartu, it might be our next study after this article, but I'm not sure. It should be, I think. But this explains which explains it. Naram-Sin, the grandson of Sargon the Great, is confused with Ninus, as we stated there also, which explains it also as to the reigns omitted after Belus, right, in writings. So if they confused Naram-Sin, you see, with Ninus, then they thought that because he was the grandson of Sargon, and they didn't even, the people who wrote these lists, these history, historical lists of kings, they might not have known he was the grandson, they might have thought he was the son. But he was, so they called Ninus the son of Belus, because they confused Naram-Sin with Ninus. And Naram-Sin was the son, but not directly. He was actually the grandson, which is close to being the son. So a lot closer than Ninus was, because he was not at all the son of Sargon, or possibly not even related very closely to Sargon. So we believe, anyway. So this explains this, the reigns omitted after Belus, because they thought, well, Ninus came right after Sargon, essentially. We have identified Ninus as Gudea or Chedorlaomer. That's from Genesis chapter 14, Chedorlaomer, who lived, and he's called Gudea in our own identification, and who lived in Abraham's time. He was the one that Abraham had to pursue after the kings that were with him, that had conquered and taken away Lot, and those kings that were victorious, that had captured Lot, Abraham had to return, or chase them, I should say, and recapture or retrieve Lot and save him, rescue him from having, you know, being a captive. And who also, Gudea had a nickname, Ninus. And he was the one who reigned at 2141, the start of the Assyrian Empire, which is calculated like this: 2783 minus 34 minus 42. We know the 34 years, that's preliminary before the Tower of Babel, and then the 42 is the Tower of Babel construction, and then 190 for the reign of the kings after that, according to Jackson. And then 215 for the Arabian kings. And then the dynasty of Akkad, 161. When we subtract those five numbers from 2783, we get 2141. But I'm going to have to do this every time I talk about it. I'll have to calculate it again because I don't want to be later on discovering any mistake. I'm quite confident there's no mistake because I've done this calculation many, many times, having been afraid in the past that I might make a mistake. Yes, it's 2141. That is correct. That's the beginning of the Assyrian Empire, but I think we will, if we bear with the rest of this paragraph, we will perhaps understand it even better, what's involved here. The sum of 32 plus 42 plus 190 that has the tower building years added may be seen to be 266, which is just 263 when taken from the death of Shem in 2780 BCE in the Blessed Genealogy. It becomes 263, or 3 years less if we count from a point 3 years lower, which is 2780. And that 263 is the total of Africanus for all the kings he lists for the first Egyptian dynasty. So that's remarkable. Quite remarkable. The date of 2141 is also very precisely determined by the book of Jasher, the Battle of Siddim, being dated by Abraham's birth in 2206 BCE of the Blessed Genealogy, and his age 60 years at the time, as being in 2146 BCE of the Blessed Genealogy. The last 5 years of Chedorlaomer's service to Amraphel, who we identify as Arbelus here, interestingly, from the same book of Jasher, being sequential, ending in Abraham's 10th year in Canaan at age 65, when, in 2141, Chedorlaomer routs Amraphel, the king of Shinar, finally, and Gudea, or Chedorlaomer, as Ninus, begins rule as king of Assyria, ending the great dynasty of Akkad. Footnote here is interesting. Africanus says that Ninus inherited the kingdom from Belus. This is footnote number two. In the year 2141 BCE. That's the same exact year that we put for the beginning of the Assyrian kingdom. Just the same as Africanus also does. As he says, Ninus began the Assyrian kingdom in the very same year, 2141, startlingly agreeing with us on this date, although he has to be corrected, as it was Arbelus and not Belus, because Ninus did not inherit the kingdom from Belus directly. For the full list of kings who preceded Ninus is Belus, Babius, Anibus, Calais, Arbelus. This is from Chronological Antiquities, Volume 1, 1752, by John Jackson. The date, 2141 BCE, and for the list of kings, it's page 238. It's the list of kings is page 262, it looks like there, yeah, and the other thing, the date of 2141 is page 238, that's right, and the list of kings, page 262. So if we wanted to look that up, we could look that up in the book by Jackson called Chronological Antiquities, Volume 1, 1752, which is a free book. The last time I searched, it was online. So the amazing thing there is that Africanus agrees exactly with our date for the beginning of the Assyrian kingdom. Now, he was a Christian chronographer or chronologist, you know, who studied the Bible with the intent of getting chronology. So he used the Bible. It's very slightly less surprising because of that fact that he agrees with us, perhaps, but it's still very surprising that somebody agrees with our date. Nobody agrees with anything in history with anyone else. No one agrees with anyone else. And I mean nobody who's independently, you know, become an expert. And done their own research and satisfied themselves as to the chronology. No one agrees with anyone else. Jackson himself identifies the third dynasty of Babylon as directly following the Arabian dynasty and consisting of Belus and four descendants. Although his duration differs, the number of kings, and although his duration differs, the number of kings matches that of the dynasty of Akkad, with Sargon I, his two sons, a grandson, Naram-Sin, and great-grandson, Sharkali-Shari, five in all, before the Assyrian Ninus conquered it. This he calls an important piece of history unknown to all chronologers. Very interesting. So Jackson was, at that time in 1752, to his knowledge, the only one who had this information, at least in the Western world. And he gives for Belus a date of death from Africanus, the 28th year of Terah. This is remarkable, I believe, because I read this earlier, a date which in the Blessed Genealogy chronology, with Terah born in 2276, his 28th year is 2248. 28 years after 2276 is 2248, and that is precisely 54 years after 2302, which is the year we gave for Sargon year one. And Sargon was said to have ruled 55 years. We've got 54 years from 2302 to 2248. If you do that math, that's very exact. It's almost exactly 55. Thus, in miraculously good agreement with the reigns of Belus and Sargon I, each has 55 years. So, in other words, Belus appears to be the same person as Sargon I. Quite remarkable way of identifying by the exact years. A time period of 55 years inclusive later. It's remarkable. That's incredible, fantastically wonderful, beautiful agreement. In particular, in this paragraph, with the we're talking about these kings. Well, all of it, right from the beginning of the first dinasty, which began in Shinar, all the way down. But at the end, there the agreement that was so remarkable was. In particular with the dynasty of Akkad. It was remarkable agreement, even dated to the very year of Abraham's father. And the reason why it was dated that way is because Terah was in the army. He was a leader in the army at the time. In some of the accounts, in some of the writings about this, Terah is mentioned as being in the army of one of these kings, what year was that again? What year was it that we just got for that? I've forgotten. There's so much information here. What year was it? We were starting in 2302, right? And so his 28th year. Well, he was only 28 years old at that time, is what that could mean as to his 28th year. That's what we interpreted it as meaning. So at that point, he may have become, just at that point, a leader in the army or a general in the army at the age of 28, is possible. But it's very around the time when a leader would be possibly a newly appointed general, but somebody who was appointed to lead an army could be that young, certainly. But this is interesting that I haven't looked at all of it recently, because we have to go back to find the source of who it was who wrote that Tira was in his 28th year at the time, but that was the death of Sargon and therefore the beginning of his successor. But I believe Tira was a leader in the army of some of the of one or more of the later kings who came after. The fact that it was his 28th year, it was just a way of documenting when it happened. So that could have been his age and not his time as a general. So, but it's interesting that it's such a precise thing that it looks like we know. It seems like now we know. It gives us confidence. We know. It seems incredible that we could know this because we've just made a connection between a real dynasty in real recorded history and the Bible. The father of Abraham, he's recorded as being part of the history of the dynasty of Akkad. That's incredible. And Abraham was born in 2206 BCE in the genealogy, which would be 42 more years, right? From 28, Tira at the age of 28, 42 more years, he became 70 years old. And that's when we place the birth of Abraham in the 70th year of Tira. But, and 2248 is 42 years before 2206, which is the birth of Abraham. So now by the birth of Abraham, Tira may have been by that time a general. He may have been 70 years old at that time too. Well, he was, according to our chronology, the genealogy, he was exactly... Within a year or so, he was that age, in the year 2206, and he may have been a general at that time in the army of whichever king was ruling then. And that king was either, let's see, I think it was possibly Naram-Sin, because 2141, but recently I saw something that made me think differently, but it If Naram-Sin ruled for about 40 years, and that's what we believe, and Shark-Ali-Shari for 25 years, and Shark-Ali-Shari... Well, if Shark-Ali-Shari began to rule in 2166, which is 25 years prior to 2141, then it would be 2166 plus 40 would put Naram-Sin as king right at that time of the birth of Abraham. So it looks like it's right around the time of Naram-Sin, and that's remarkable because that explains also why Naram-Sin is confused with Ninus, because Ninus was involved later in Abraham's life when Abraham was 60 years old in 2146 when Chedorlaomer, who actually... was actually the same person as Ninus, as we understand it, went on the march to fight, you know, that famous battle of Genesis chapter 14. That was 2146, the 14th year of Chedorlaomer, or Ninus. And so Ninus was involved in Abraham's life. In fact, Abraham was involved as a man who was then 60 years old. But when Abraham was born, Naram-Sin was the king. So he was Abraham's life was intertwined with both Naram-Sin and with Ninus. So that really does give us a marvelous understanding of how we can account for the confusion between Naram-Sin and Ninus too. It's remarkable. So now, little children, we might go, Jehovah willing, to, having looked at our proverb, Genesis 25. So we know that in 24, well, we know in 23, of course, that 24 was a very long chapter. In 23, Sarah died. in Genesis chapter 23. In Genesis chapter 24, Abraham sent his servant to Mesopotamia to bring back a wife for Abraham's son Isaac. And that was what happened in that chapter. Chapter 25 now of Genesis. Furthermore, Abraham again took a wife. Sarah had died. Abraham again took a wife, and her name was Keturah. In time, she bore him Zimran, and Jokshan, and Medan, and Midian, and Ishbak, and Shua. And Jokshan became father to Sheba and Dedan. And the sons of Dedan became Ashurim, and Letushim, and Leumim. And the sons of Midian were Ephah, and Epher, and Hanok, and Abida, and Eldaiah. All these were the sons of Keturah. Later on, Abraham gave everything he had to Isaac, but to the sons of the concubines that Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts. Then he sent them away from Isaac his son, while he was still alive, eastward to the land of the east. And these are the days of the years of Abraham's... My throat is still tickling. Let me get some water. These are the years and the days of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived 175 years. Then Abraham expired and died in a good old age, old and satisfied, 175 years old, and was gathered to his people. So Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, that is in front of Mamre, the field that Abraham had purchased. Abraham, I can't say Abraham, the ham is what's tickling my throat. The field that Abraham had purchased from the sons of Heth, there Abraham was buried, and also Sarah his wife. And it developed that after Abraham's death, God continued to bless Isaac his son, and Isaac was dwelling close by Beer Lahai-Roi. And this is the history of Ishmael, the son of Abraham, whom Hagar the Egyptian, the maidservant of Sarah, bore to Abraham. Now these are the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names according to their family origins: Ishmael's firstborn, Nebaioth, and Kedar, and Abdiel, and Mibsam, and Mishma, and Duma, and Massa, Hadad, and Tema, Jetur, Naphish, and Kedema. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their courtyards and by their walled camps: 12 chieftains according to their clans. And these are the years of Ishmael's life, 137. Sarah lived 127. Ishmael's life, 137 years. Then he expired and died and was gathered to his people. And they took up tabernacling from Havilah near Shur, which is in front of Egypt as far as Assyria. In front of all his brothers, he settled down. And this is the history of Isaac, the son of Abraham. Abraham became father to Isaac. And Isaac happened to be 40 years old at his taking Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Paddan Aram, the sister of Laban the Syrian, as his wife. And Isaac kept on entreating Jehovah, especially for his wife, because she was barren. So Jehovah let himself be entreated for him, and Rebekah his wife became pregnant, and the sons within her began to struggle with each other, so that she said, "If this is the way it is, just why am I alive?" With that she went to inquire of Jehovah, and Jehovah proceeded to say to her, "Two nations are in your belly, and two national groups will be separated from your inward parts. And the one national group will be stronger than the other national group, and the older will serve the younger." Gradually her days came to the full for giving birth, and look, twins were in her belly. Then the first came out red all over like an official garment of hair. So they called his name Esau. And after that, his brother came out, and his hand was holding on to the heel of Esau. So he called his name Jacob. The name Esau means hairy, and the name Jacob means means taking hold of the heel, or supplanter, somebody who would take the place of another person. And Isaac was 60 years old at her giving them birth, and the boys got bigger. And Esau became a man knowing how to hunt, a man of the field, but Jacob a blameless man dwelling in tents. And Isaac had love for Esau because it meant game in his mouth, whereas Rebekah was a lover of Jacob. Once Jacob was boiling up some stew, when Esau came along from the field and he was tired, so Esau said to Jacob, "Quick, please, give me a swallow of the red there, for I am tired." That is why his name was called Edom. Edom means red. To this Jacob said, "Sell me first of all your right as firstborn." And Esau continued, "Here I am simply going to die, and of what benefit to me is a birthright?" And Jacob added, "Swear to me first of all." And he proceeded to swear to him and to sell his right as firstborn to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he went to eating and drinking. Then he got up and went his way. So Esau despised the birthright. He ate the lentil stew in place of keeping his birthright. He despised his birthright. He sold it to Jacob for a bowl of stew. That's the end of Genesis chapter 25. Some important things happen there because Jacob is the one who got the birthright from Esau and thereafter becomes the one who receives the promise. But we knew was that the seed was going to be through Isaac, the son of Abraham, but we didn't know which son of Isaac would receive the promise until we see there that Esau sold his birthright to his younger son, because Esau was born first. He was the firstborn of the two twins. Oh, it's a wonderful, it's a point of history here, that what happened. It's divine history, right? It's the history of God's people. The one Abraham who was given a promise by Jehovah. This is where the whole story of the... Well, it wasn't the beginning of the story, because in the Garden of Eden, of course, in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, there was a promise given, a prophecy about the seed of the woman. Eve's seed, the seed of the woman, who was called Eve, her seed would be one who would bruise the head of the serpent in that prophecy. And that, if you recall, little children, meant that the seed had to be documented all the way along. So Abraham had to be kept track of who was the seed. So Abraham was promised the seed. He was promised that the seed would be by means of him, that his seed would become a very great number, but that by means of his seed, all the nations would be blessed. So also it corresponds well to the bruising of the head of the serpent, because the blessing of all people on earth would necessarily need to be eradicating the evil influence of the devil as well. So this seed that was promised eventually became, through the promise given to Abraham, it came to be through Isaac, and then through Isaac's son. Isaac being the son of Abraham and Jacob being the son of Isaac, the promise came to be through Jacob, and eventually came down, descended. One son of Jacob was Judah, and Judah was the son through whom the promised Messiah came. Also, King David was in that lineage also. He was another one in the lineage of the promised seed. But Jesus was born through that lineage by means of his mother Mary also in the line of David. He was of the family of David and therefore of the family of Judah, therefore of the family of Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham, who were in the promised lineage. So this is all part of the divine history that we have in the Bible. So that's all for today, little children. I need to get some sleep pretty soon. It's March 25th, 2023. Now the time is 1322 hours daylight savings time in the Eastern time zone of North America. And Ward Green here. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. It's so much information to be continually reading, but if we need to know it, if we feel that we're going to have any hope of understanding what God has given us in his word, then we need to keep studying it, don't we? So praise all of you who are working hard in helping to do the work of Jehovah, and praise Jehovah especially, and of course his son. May he be blessed forever. And that's all for today. I love you very much, though. Bye for now. Have a wonderful day.